the more I am thinking, and the more I'm reading, and the more I'm speaking with people, the more I realize how happy I am. The greatest beauty of arts is music. And we musicians, wherever we go, we have this beauty. Nobody can take it from us.
For Heart and Soul, here on the BBC World Service, Alice Herz-Sommer tells her extraordinary life story, taking in the key events of a century of European history. We'll hear how her life as a celebrated Jewish pianist came to a brutal end with the Nazi persecution of Europe's Jews, and how she coped with the loss of nearly all those she'd loved most. I'll be visiting some of the places in the Czech Republic that were so important to Alice in her earlier life, and we'll hear some of her original musical performances. And Alice shares her very personal understanding of God and what really matters, and how it's helped her to remain the life-affirming optimist she was during that long-gone Prague childhood.
I was in 1905 born. We were five children, three girls and two boys. I had a twin sister. She was a terrible pessimist, and I the contrary. We are very close. She knew what I will say when she asked something, and the same I. She was very clever and beautiful and actually an artist. And the elder sister was 12 years older, excellent pianist, and she taught me till the age of 12 maybe. Prague 7 is a very beautiful place. My father had a house there. This was not far from us, a very big synagogue, and this synagogue was a beautiful place. My father went once a year in this synagogue, and my grandmother was teaching us Hebrew. And in school, we learned religion, so we knew Jewishness.
This is the old town, once the vibrant heart of Jewish Prague. It's still a lively place. At the end of the 19th century, the world-famous Czech Jewish writer Franz Kafka lived as a boy in the unusual house above this colonnade in the old town square. It's decorated with friezes of black and white figures. Kafka grew up in the winding maze of streets that made up the old Jewish ghetto, and perhaps that's why the heroes of his stories find themselves trapped in nightmarish situations. He died in 1924, so there are few still living who can claim to have met him, let alone to have known him. But when Alice was a little girl, he was a family friend.
Franz Kafka was the best friend of the husband of my sister, and he came in very often to our house, and my mother spoke with him about his books and so on. He was a member of our family, I would say. And we loved children, so very often he took us.
Is that you and your sister?
My twin sister. And he took us for a walk. And I remember once he took us in a place outside Prague, I believe. We were sitting on a bench, and he was opposite us, sitting on a stone, and told us a story. I forgot the story. But still now, the atmosphere, I feel it making an impression on us. He became a child with his big eyes. In this moment, we were three children there. I would say he was shy, and for him, life, ordinary life, daily life, was a fight. And one of his sentences was, in this world, to bring up children, in this world.
Yet despite such ominous warnings, Alice's musical childhood was a happy one.
My mother was extremely musical. She played piano as an amateur. Every evening she was sitting in our living room and she said, children, go play. I was maybe in this time 6, 7, 8 years old. And my brother was 3 years older. He was an excellent violinist. And we played. I started to teach at the age of 14, The money I earned, I gave to my mother, of course. And in the age of, I believe, 16, I bought for my money a piano. I played in the big cities, and I played in the radio very often. As a Jewish well-known pianist. I was the only Jewish pianist.
Did they say that then on the program?
It was written on the program. I was very proud.
And when Alice had finished playing, or listening to her peers, she and her friends would stroll over this cobbled bridge over the River Voltava, the famous Charles Bridge, a magnet for tourists now, their pace reduced to a shuffle by the crowds who make their way past its peddlers and musicians, across to Malastrana, the little quarter, and one of Alice's best-loved haunts.
This is a very well-known bridge, and the whole area is beautiful. And in winter time, when it was full of snow, and the moon was shining, and we were full of music, it's unforgettable. I met my husband, we were the same age. His family was very friendly with the family of my best friend Trude. And we had a third very best friend, Daisy was her name. We were in the age of 23. And I remember the father of Daisy found Daisy died. In this time, there were not antibiotics. She had a pneumonia and died. So we were in a terrible shock. And Trude wrote to my husband him about this tragedy, and he wrote back. And she gave me this letter. What he wrote about life and death, unforgettable, do you know? And I decided, this man I must meet. I must meet. So I met him, and after 2 weeks, I married him.
After 2 weeks?
Yeah, after 2 weeks. He was excellent violinist, spoke 4 languages fluently, a wonderful sense of humor.
So you'd fallen in love with his mind?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, sex in this time didn't exist. To kiss somebody didn't exist. In 33... we were married. In the year 37, my son was born. I was already 31 years old. And I must say this was my happiest time to bring up this child.
But Alice's paradise was about to be shattered. Just 2 years after her son Raphael was born, in 1939, the Nazis occupied Prague. By that time, Hitler's anti-Jewish policies that would lead to the murder of millions of European Jews were already well underway. This plain facade is the block of apartments where Alice and her husband and son were billeted during the Nazi occupation of Prague before they were deported to Terezin concentration camp in 1942. Alice remembers living on the third floor.
Above us and beneath us were Nazis living. My son was playing with the son of this Nazi. A year before we were transported, my mother, in the age of 73, she was sent away. Alone with a rucksack on the back, she had to leave. For me was this the lowest moment in my life, I must say. And I went back home, and I now, after such a lot of years, I remember the place. I had to stop, and the inner voice said to me, now you can help yourself, only you alone. Not the doctor, even not the wonderful child. Nobody can help you, only yourself. So I was, from this day on, I was sitting 8 hours a day, and I was playing and playing. The 25 Etudes by Chopin.
It wasn't long until Alice and her family were also on the list for deportation to Terezin concentration camp.
The evening before, I remember we were sitting with my husband and all the rucksacks already packed up. We were sitting in dark because I wanted my son to sleep the last night in his beautiful, nice bed. And suddenly came my Czech friends from living in my house without telling us good evening, ignoring us. They took everything, a carpet, for instance, furniture, whatever was still there, they took. For them, we were already dead, I believe. And in the last moment, a German man, Hermann was his name, living above us, came, a Nazi in his uniform, and said to me, "Mr. Sommer, I was sitting for hours and listening to you. I admire your energy and your patience, how you are working. This is unbelievable. I admire you. Mrs. Sommer, I know you are now leaving us. I don't know what to tell you. I hope your family will come back." They were human beings. The German Nazis were human beings.
You're listening to Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service. I'm Judy Herman, and today I'm hearing the story of Alice Hert Sommer, the celebrated Jewish pianist who's now 108 years old. It looks such a normal, neat sort of town. Wide open grassy spaces, neat rows of houses, and occasional parades of shops. But there are still clues to the terrible use the Nazis found for the garrison town of Terezin, or Theresienstadt in German, as a transit camp to hold Jews destined for the death camps of Poland. The ramparts surrounding the town, making it an obvious stronghold for keeping hostile forces out, or prisoners in. And now, of course, the museum in the centre, housing its eloquent displays of photographs, films, and the poignant drawings and pictures made by the thousands of children interned here. Very few of them survived. But Alice not only survived Terezin, she made its grim walls ring with music and brought real respite and happiness to her fellow inmates.
When we came to Terezin, to this place, I saw a lot of people said hello to me. I didn't recognize them. They were so ill and unhappy.
And there were people you knew?
My good friends. I couldn't recognize them.
So the life in the camp, physically, yeah, was very hard?
Very hard. Absolutely very hard. And to be with a 6-year-old boy in a concentration camp without eating. In the morning, a black water, coffee, in the lunchtime, a white water, soup, and in the evening, a black water. For 2 years, we lost on weight, of course. But this is actually a message, I would say, for the whole. We human beings in a very difficult situation, maybe we don't need to eat. Food. In this camp, the spirit was our food. In this camp, I had more than 100 concerts, not only myself. We were a big group of excellent musicians, excellent conductors and composers and pianists and violinists, cellists, singers, concertgoers from all over the world, from Paris, from Warsaw, from Berlin, from Vienna, from everywhere. When a mother says this with a child in the concentration camp, that she was happy, so is something, I believe, special. And what it is? The music. Music is a bliss. A good thing happened that we came on Tuesday, I remember, on Tuesday in July 43, in this camp, and on Wednesday next day, my little boy, not yet 6 years old, was engaged to participate in an opera called Brunnibar, composed by Hans Krasa, a very good friend of mine. This took place in the attic of one of these barracks. People were sitting on the floor, and maybe 30 children were singing. My little boy had the role of a sparrow. After a year being in this camp, my husband with 1,000 other men were sent away. Nobody came back.
But your son was allowed to stay with you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We slept 2 years on one bed, didn't exist, mattresses. What will happen to me will happen to him. As long as a child is quite near of the mother, nothing can happen for the child. I remember that sometimes my boy came, he's hungry. So I saw a little piece of bread, so I stole it. My child is hungry. I took it with a good conscience. I'd say every mother would have done it. And so we stayed till the end, and then suddenly one day, May of 45, Russian came with a flag, so we knew we are liberated.
This is the Pinker Synagogue, one of the deconsecrated places of worship that are now part of the Jewish Museum. It has a poignant new use, for the whole building is now a Holocaust memorial. Its walls are entirely covered in neat red and black writing, for here are listed the names of every one of the 77,297 Czech Jews who perished in the Holocaust, town by town, family by family. And among them are the names of Alice's mother, Sophie, and her husband, Leopold.
When I came back from Terezin, when I came to Israel, where both my sisters were already, I decided not to speak a word with anybody about my being in Theresienstadt, because hatred brings hatred. We can live only with love. And I believe I succeeded with my son. He has very good friends in Germany. I have very good friends in Germany. We are all the same. We are good and bad. This is a nice story. I was still in Prague. When I came back from Terezin, the next day I went to the post office and asked whether I can send to my sisters a telegram to Israel, because they didn't know that I am alive still. They had no idea what happened to us. I wrote in this telegram, they should open at a certain day at midnight the radio, I will play. So I played Appassionata by Beethoven. So they were listening. They knew that I am still alive and my son. 2 minutes before my twin sister died, she thanked me that I sent her this telegram and that she could listen to this music.
So you've really made a new start. You're living in Jerusalem.
37 years I have been there. I must say the best time in my life. I had several hundred pupils, a lot of Arab pupils, and I remember very often the parents of these children came as well. And we were sitting together, and I tell you, they were nice people. And they said, look, we are sitting here so nice together, and we love one another. And in politics, we can't find peace. We can't find peace.
So this was a great joy to pass on the music.
Absolutely. And then I had a lot of concerts. I played several times with orchestra. I played with chamber music and recitals. I had a good life. 30 years ago, my twin sister died. And in this moment when she died, I decided to leave. I couldn't live in a place where she died. So I left and came here to England. My son studied 7 years in Paris, and then he came here, married Sylvie, her name.
So you've got two grandchildren?
Yeah, David and Ariel.
Now, we have here a fantastic portrait of your son bending over his cello. It's the look of rapt attention of the musician, and the way his hand is moving across the cello is beautiful.
Yeah. My son, his pleasure was to show to people the beauty of music and this language, because this language and this beauty brings us in a place where it is only light, peace, and love. He was a thinker, a philosopher, I mean, till in the age of 64, his death. Suddenly, they wanted to operate him, but in the anesthesia, he didn't wake up. So he didn't know. For this, I am grateful.
It's a terrible thing for a mother to lose a son. Yeah. How do you come to terms with that?
This is really very hard. But I am grateful that he died in the age of 64. He didn't know what it is to be old, having two excellent children, and as a survivor, actually a good life. Even now he's dead, not a moment I am without. Every word he said, I can remember. This is God, let us say.
That's the miracle, that he's still with you.
Yes. I would say this very hard experience in life makes you richer. Much richer. And much happier, actually. And you are full of gratefulness, actually, that I passed this very hard time. And speaking of God, for me, we are surrounded by miracles. The world is a miracle. We are a miracle. Our brain is a miracle. Our eyes, our ears, the nature. We are surrounded by miracles.
Having a very long life, and I know you're an optimist. Do you see it totally as a blessing, a long life?
I wrote once an article about the old age. Actually, it's the most beautiful time in our life because we got a lot of experience and we compare. This is better now, we can compare it. And when I am with young people, I am much younger than they.
I've noticed that.
Full of interest and joy. And what we need when we are old is actually quietness. We are not curious to see the world. We saw a lot, of course. We are sitting here, and when a good friend is sitting with you, and we listen to music, and we speak about music, and we are happy. It helps me a lot. It inspires me. I believe to keep oneself fresh is the best thing, to learn, to read, and to work with the brain. We got a brain. Yeah. On Sunday, I take the telephone, and I phone to my friends. Which day will you come? So every day I have some. And if this is good for the brain, why? Because you have to listen to other people, to live with their life and their problems. And this is a good medicine, better than 100 pills.
Looking back on a life full of musical passion, but also marked by persecution and loss, what does Alice Herz-Sommer make of those big questions about life and death? How does she face her own death? And what are her thoughts about the death of those who crossed her path?
I have a good feeling. I did my duty. I was an honest person. And I helped a lot. Half of my pupils didn't pay me, for instance. I have a good feeling. I did really my best. I have pity with everybody. I have pity with all the German living a survivor of Hitler, what sort of end of their life these people will have. I don't envy them. In this time they were young, now they are old people. Time comes and they have pay for it. Life and death is one thing. So we live and then we die. The main difference is between in life is full of activity. We want to achieve the utmost in life. And when we achieve this, it's beautiful to die. I don't see in death something terrible. For the family it's difficult, but for the people who die, it's beautiful, why not? The only thing is that my family and my friends will very often speak of myself and with good feelings, and this gives me a satisfaction.
So you're obviously not afraid of death then?
It's beautiful. Thank you.